You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome back to the Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. I'm Jenna Bosgarden, Manager of Digital Marketing.
And this is Ashley Lacombe-Lozic, Head of R&D for Smart Equine. Coming up on today's show, we're breaking down one of our biggest fears as horse people, barn fires. And we're talking about the real steps that we can take to lower the risk and keep our horses and ourselves safer.
And don't forget, we'll have a giveaway at the end of this episode, so make sure you're here for that too.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Health Cast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinary or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinary or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
Okay, so as horse people, we've all been in barns, around barns, and we know that barns are particularly vulnerable to fire. There's things like faulty wiring and hay and heaters and lighting and all sorts of things that keep us all up at night, I'm sure. But I did want to start out with a really quick note. I did some research before this. There's only so much that, you know, we know anecdotally, and I wanted to get some real information outside of that. And I found that from the Animal Welfare Institute, which is awionline.org, they reported about 100 barn fires in 2024 and 100 in 2023, with about 15 of those involving horses each year. And I'm not saying that to scare anyone. That's actually a smaller number than I would have guessed, honestly. The 100 is really big, but the 15 feels pretty good overall. I mean, these are barn fires where we're counting like dairy farms, poultry farms, all sorts of production farms. So if the number is only 15 for horse farms, it feels like that means a lot of barns are doing a lot of things really, really right. And it's not all just about preparation. I know that there are some situations you just can't plan for. And that's kind of what we wanted to focus on this episode, what you can control, what you can't control, and what to do in both of those situations when it comes to fire safety and our horses. And Ashley, I know as an owner of a barn, this is something that is very near and dear to your heart. And you said recently that you just finished up a whole like fire and disaster preparation plan. Is that right?
We did. Yeah, we did. It was something that, you know, we've kind of had it informally for ages and ages and ages. We just had never committed it to paper. So we actually did that this spring. And so this is very top of mind and something that I'm sure keeps every barn owner up at night. And once you have it like committed and you know what your plan is, I think we all sleep a little bit better.
Yeah. And before we get into the details of like what that plan entails, you said that you put it to paper. So I know that you own the barn. You have a fantastic barn manager. Yeah. Is there a way that you guys like worked on it together? Did you pull the information from, and how did you decide what was going to go into it?
Yeah. So I've had in a previous life, I did like business continuity for like in a corporate setting. So I had a little bit of background on how to prepare like a business continuity plan. But yeah, it was a concerted effort between me, my parents, who also live on the property, our barn manager, and our staff, because I think your plan is really only as good as the people who are prepared to execute the plan.
What a great point.
So you have to stack hands on everything. And then as soon as we have our like actual fire drill, then it'll be something where we'll push it out to all the boarders so that everybody has a good understanding of, you know, what we will be doing and what your role is in the event of an emergency.
That's really cool. We're going to loop back on the fire drill thing, but I think we'll loop back on that later. Trying to get ahead of myself. So we have all this on paper and you guys have it committed. Is it like a doc that you guys share? Is it printed and laminated? Just like, I'm now curious on how the distribution looks like everybody has it.
Yep. So it's a document, and right now it's living in perpetuity on like in a updatable, like living, breathing, like shared file. And then it is also in a binder. And then pieces and parts of it do get laminated and posted, like the placards that show the egress maps of like, here are you in the barn, right? Little star. Here's a map. Here's where you are. Here's how to get out of the barn. Here's where the fire extinguishers are located. Here's where the hoses are located, right? So there are a lot of pieces of it that should live in a living document because it's going to be updated. You know, if a new horse comes into the barn or if there is a change in where a spigot is located, those things should be, you know, kind of living and breathing and changing as, you know, the business changes.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love the idea of just having that posted around the barn too. So anybody there kind of has the ability to access and know just in the event of.
I mean, simple things like making sure you have like illuminated exit signs and, like you're running a real business and you have real clientele and you have, you know, 60 living beings in your barn at all times. So making sure you just take it really seriously, I think, is the first step. If you're worried about it, that's good, right? Then you should be worried about it. So if you're taking the measures to improve, then you're already on the right track.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where horses and riding, like for so many of us, it's a hobby. It's where we go to escape and feel good and feel light. But like, it is really important to remember, like you said, for a lot of us, it's a business. For a lot of us, like we do, pay money for it at the end of the day. We care about these horses and these people. We want to be really cognizant of their safety too.
Totally.
Well, when you're looking at your barn, I think you guys like put a lot of work into updating and building a lot of pieces of it. So maybe you're not dealing with these old hay barns like we have out in New England, but I'm sure that that doesn't really change what you're looking at as far as like, what is safety? Like, what are like the points and the checks that you guys do throughout the month or throughout the year for fire safety?
That's a great question. And we do have some old structures and old hay barns. So, okay. I mean, obviously the barn that the horses live in is relatively new. It was built in 2005. So it's 20 years old, but we do have some buildings that on the property that date back to like the 80s when the property was
first built out. Yes, then you're familiar with both.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of both. So, I mean, I go through the checklist. The first one, and actually, like, I can't help myself, like, anytime I'm in anyone else's barn and I see this happen, it just, like, sends shivers down my spine. And I know that sometimes it's unavoidable, but, like, I can't get over when I see long-stem forage being stored inside of the same building that the horses are living in. Like, that
is a big thing.
It's big. And listen, I get that not everybody has ancillary buildings that are, you know, 200 yards away where you can store your hay, but the first thing that I would always attempt to do is separate my hay from my horses. Like, I get that there are hay lofts and, you know, sometimes you have no choice, but we do store our hay in a different building.
Yeah.
If
you have the ability to, it's definitely an important one. I know we were building a barn on the property, or we were building a hay barn on the property I was at. And until we could, we emptied out the hay lofts and we put it all into a trailer that we had just parked on the property. Was it ugly? Yeah. Was it safer? Yeah.
I mean, ugly is acceptable.
Yep.
You know, we learned the hard way too. We actually had a quote unquote spontaneous combustion fire a couple years back. Yeah. I mean, thank God, right? We had our hay separated.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I've told you in previous episodes that we bale our own hay. We grow and bale our own hay. So that was a lesson learned on like making sure that you're monitoring moisture content of your hay properly, and because spontaneous combustion can happen. So sometimes, like you said, you can do everything right. You can have every, you know, electrician out, and you can have every smoking policy in place, and freak things happen. So, you know, the first thing I would say is in any way you can, try your best to keep the bulk of your hay separate from where your horses are living. Like, keeping a bale or two that you're going to feed in the next hour is totally different, but storing a winter's worth of hay under the same roof as your horses can, you know, present some safety challenges. And granted, like you said, there's sometimes you just can't avoid it. And in those scenarios, you just want to make sure that you're controlling all of the other elements that you can control, like electrical safety.
Yeah. And real quick, I wanted to ask, with the moisture content, how are you checking that? Is it a physical check? Is there like a probe you guys can use? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a pro. So we have a like hay specialist who actually like cuts and flips and bales the hay for us.
Oh, wow.
So like once we cut the hay, you have to monitor the moisture of the hay on the ground before it's baled. And sometimes, like, if we have, like, it'll, you know, the weather forecast will say it's going to look beautiful for the next 4 days. And then, like, we cut the hay and suddenly it's raining. And you're like, oh, darn.
Yep.
So you have to let that hay dry. You have to flip it. And then before it's baled, you're monitoring that moisture content with a probe to make sure that it's in the appropriate range for baling. So I'm not going to pretend to be a hay expert.
Sure.
I mean, I am a hay expert in terms of nutritional composition, but not in terms, I'm not a hay farmer myself. So
yeah,
definitely leave that up to the experts. But that is certainly something that they are monitoring constantly to make sure, particularly in really big bales. It's not as concerning in the small, like 40 or 50 pound two stringers. But we bale in round bales, like large 1,000-pound round bales and 1,000-pound large square bales. So that leaves
well, you
a
guys
big
are storing,
core, out of hay. I mean, enough to feed enough to feed 60 horses quite the time, you know, so
not an insignificant amount.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so I love the idea too, like if you keep hay in the barn, or if it's easier to like just keeping, you know, the couple of bales you're going to feed, you know, mm-hmm. that day or that evening, like that feels like a really nice workaround for the people who are able to do that. That was a great point. But then you mentioned electrical. Yeah. I think that's something that we all kind of, So what have you done? Like, what do you guys look for? What's on your checklist?
This is like something actually that is relatively top of mind for me, because I remember last spring, I'm walking through the barn and we're a heated facility, right? So like we have gas heaters that are throughout the barn, lots of lights. I mean, it's a pretty significant sized building, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong in that scenario. So the first thing that I wanted to get rid of was extension cords. Like I know that they make outside extension cords. I get it. But decreasing the points of failure was like the most important thing for me, right? So like if we could go through the barn every day and know where there's some places extension cords can't be avoided. So I just wanted to avoid them where I could. And the first place that I noticed them everywhere was connecting the fans inside the stalls.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that you don't really think of. Like, right, you go to a horse show and there's like one outlet for seven stalls and everyone is like wrapping the extension cords around the beams.
And,
you know, to their box fans that are like notoriously known for, you know, having electrical shorts. So the first thing we do is we have standards for every fan that goes into the stalls. They have to be rated for outdoor use and they have to have like a covered battery motor.
Cover. Yeah. So
make sure that you're not using like indoor fans for your outdoor barn. And I consider, I consider my barn to be quote outdoor, like even though it isn't inside, right? We're inside of a building. Yeah, yeah. I assume that it is treated like, you know, it's not ambient all the time. So I treat it as though it's outdoor. All of the extension cords that we use, we always make sure they're rated for outdoor use. So, yeah, we got rid of extension cords. So that required a massive capital improvement expenditure. We added we were seeing, as we had more horses with more fans, we started seeing like some shorts of the circuit board and we're like, I don't feel comfy with that. We're going to add a new circuit. So we redid the entire electrical panel last year. And when we did that, we put hardwired outlets above every single stall so that every fan could plug directly into a plug and not a extension cord. So that was
no small endeavor, but incredibly worth it.
Yeah. And you know what? It's one of those things that like your boarders like to see the capital improvements, which like, we redid this. We got a new freezer. We put new footing in the outdoor. And I'm like, I know this is not an improvement you can see, but this is an improvement that helps me sleep at night. And I'm sure. And of course, we had so many people that were so grateful for that. So, I mean, that.
Yeah, it's not as sexy as new footing.
It's so important.
It's not landscaping. But at the same time, I do think when you walk down the barn aisle and you see that the fans, you know, there's, you know, less cords, there's less on the ground. Like, there is something to that.
There absolutely is. And it's also not just the extension cords themselves, but I'm sure you like look up in a barn and you're noticing just like the cobwebs and the dust collecting in the rafters. So the less that's up in the rafters to collect dust and cobwebs that is highly flammable, the better, right? So that also just makes cleaning the rafters a little bit easier when you don't have a bunch of extension cords up there. So yeah, so we got rid of extension cords where possible. We still have them, you know, in places, again, that are unavoidable. But for the most part, the ones that are in the stalls, they're gone now. So I feel so much better about that. So, and again, that was a huge capital improvement that we, you know, had to put some financial backing to, and that's not always accessible. So when you can't rewire your whole barn, you know, the best thing to do is just to make sure that all of your extension cords are rated for outdoor use, number one. Two, that you know where they are, and so you can check on them, like, you know, I would say intermittently at best. Like, if you could check on them during your night check, like, all right, I know that there are 10 extension cords in this barn. Every barn has mice. I hate to say it. And mice are destructive, right? So, go through, just make sure your extension cords are in good, you know, usable repair, that there's not any wires being chewed through, that there's not a prong missing in the outlet. Yeah. You know, just make sure that everything is in good repair and that you don't have anything that needs to be replaced. That's a great place to start if you just don't have, you know, the means to be updating things constantly. And I think you know, to just studying your barn, making sure that you know, like, oh, this one area over here has the abundance of things plugged in. Where is that going to usually be? Like maybe in your meeting room or your viewing room where you have a refrigerator and a fan and a television or whatever it is. So yeah, just keep an eye on all your stuff and make sure that it's in good condition.
I love the idea of just adding it to your night check walkthrough too. I was the night check girl for like all of high school and most
Lucky
of college.
You.
And it, genuinely, my favorite part of the day. Loved going in and having everybody call
You're
to me for
a
nighttime hey.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
It was very sweet. And it was, you know, it was only me there. So I got to just sing and talk to them and do whatever. But not the point. I love the idea of adding that. Because, I mean, I would walk through and check stalls and buckets and blankets and things like that. But how easy would it have been just to poke my head into every location and double check on cords?
Totally. Yeah. Yep. So, and so that, I mean, that's a huge piece, right? Is just making sure that all your cords are in good shape. And then if you can, eliminating them where possible. Yeah. The other thing that I have is like a strict policy on things that cannot be left plugged in. So like, obviously someone comes to the barn, I'm not going to say like, you may not plug in your cell phone, right? Like you can charge your cell phone. If you want to bring a bucket heater and use it while you are standing in front of it, great. Mm-hmm. But we do not allow things that have... So one of our policies is that unless Oakwood has installed it, it cannot live here. So
and Oakwood is your barn.
Oakwood is the barn. Sorry. Yes. Yep. So like unless our staff have installed it, it can't stay. So okay. That means like if you bring a portable space heater, which I do not like, but you know we don't allow those to stay overnight. We have a heated barn, so I don't know why anyone would want to. But it says it in the policy just for the sake of perpetuity, right? Just in case, because you've got to say it or someone's going to do it.
Yeah, so
like space heaters cannot be left in. Cell phone chargers cannot be left plugged in. Your bucket heaters cannot be left plugged in. Anything that you have brought into the barn that was not installed by our staff cannot live there. And so that, I think, it's hard to control what 60 people do. So making a blanket statement like that, you know, has helped us to avoid folks saying like, oh, I didn't know that I couldn't bring my tiny little, you know, college dorm room fridge and leave all my sodas in it. So, you know, it's made it a little bit easier for us to keep tabs on everything.
Yeah. And I think that and like that and adding, you know, checking things to your night check routine, it goes back to what you said kind of at the start of like your preparedness plan is only as good as the staff you have running it. And as a horse owner and a rider or anybody who even goes to the barn, the parents, the grandparents, like you want to help everybody be the best they can in those situations. So it just makes sense to be like, hey, the barn asked not to do this. I can do that to make sure that their lives and my horse's life is better.
Like, hey, I really would like this in my tack room, or I think my horse needs another fan. And our staff is incredible and they will help you. Like, so just, you know, keeping the options available for us to help is saying it can come, but Oakwood staff has to install it, right?
We have to know about it.
Exactly. We have to know about it. It has to be on the roster so that we can keep tabs on it and make sure that it is safe.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So that's a big one. Yeah.
So we've talked about electrical safety, hay storage, and we talked a little bit about equipment, like how to use heaters safely and things like that and unplug things. Is there anything else with like if you guys were to have a portable heater or things like that? Is it like do you still store them in the barn if you have them? Is it okay or
no.
is it?
No, I don't.
Okay,
I don't even want them in there. Well, first of all, I don't want portable heaters. Like I ask people not to bring space heaters. We heat the barn for you. Granted, it's not going to be 80 degrees. We heat it warm enough that like, you know, the buckets don't freeze and. We keep it at like 45, which when you're dressed for zero, 45 is pretty cozy. So,
and if you're riding and moving, it doesn't feel like 45.
Right. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, the barn is heated to an appropriate ambient temperature. We typically don't have people bring space heaters. If they do, I ask them to take them home. Like, I will sleep better if I know that they're not even in. Like, if we have one of these polar vortexes and somebody needs to bring a space heater because they're coming out to clean tack and they don't want to freeze when they have to take their gloves off, fine. Two things, make sure that it has like a tip over turn off, like easy peasy. And then two, like no propane, like make sure that this is like an electrical heater and not like a gas heater. And then for the gas heaters that we have in the barn, because it is a heated facility, we're just making sure that those are serviced. Obviously, I can't the way that I'm looking at extension cords, I'm not an HVAC expert, so I'm not going to be able to look at, you know, the heaters and make sure that they're in good repair. But same story there, making sure that all of your heating and HVAC is all in good repair as well.
Yeah, I know. I was not blessed with a heated barn growing up. And New England's not as cold as the Midwest, but we're all weenies out here sometimes. So we were allowed to have the heaters, but it was very similar where we didn't have to take them home, but there was an old stone. There was no roof on it. It was just three walls and an opening in stone, not next to the barn. And that's where you had to trudge out to leave your heater and get it. So if you wanted it, you could do it, but you had to be Yeah. You'd be ready for the consequences of bringing it back and forth, which was worth it some days and not the other days.
I can imagine.
It made it safer. And I, looking back, I didn't really think about it at the time. I was 15 and complaining that my fingers were cold. But now, you know, in my 30s, like, I'm like,
darn,
thank you.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got that. And I think you also mentioned, too, a little bit about like posting policies and signage. So you have like your evacuation routes and like where things are and where you are in the barn. Is there anything else that you guys have for signage or that you put on or that you wish you had or anything like that to help with all of that?
Yeah. So inevitably, there is going to be someone that smokes on your property. Ugh. Yeah. I mean, listen, it's unavoidable. And whether it's a boarder or an employee or a friend of a friend who came to the barn to pet a pony, like someone at some point is going to smoke there. So we have forever, obviously, had a no smoking policy, obviously, in the barn. Like, I don't know that anyone is dumb enough to smoke inside of a barn, but this year we actually turned into a no smoking premises.
Oh, wow.
We had like a super drought in the spring. Like first cutting hay was slow to come in. Second, I mean, we were just slow to get rain.
Yeah.
Obviously, with all the wildfires that have been happening, like it's just scary. And like it takes one ember to fly and land in the wrong place. So we went from being a no smoking facility to a no smoking premises. Mm-hmm. So we have like placards that are going up. They're on their way to us. But like big placards that say like, please exit the premises before smoking, like including your car. Like don't go to your car and then throw your butt on the floor, right? So, I mean, that is one thing that like, listen, you may not be able to take your hay into a separate barn. You may not be able to rewire everything and get rid of all of your extension cords.
Reasonable.
But doggone it, you can make sure no one's smoking in your barn. Like that is one thing that you absolutely have 100% control over. So, you know, making sure that people are leaving your property before they are, or that you, like if you're a smoker, just make sure that you're being really cognizant of where you're smoking and, you know, who's on the property. That's no butts go on the floor. That's terrifying. The smoking thing is so easy to avoid. It starts so many fires. So making sure that you have posted placards and the assumption can't be made. Like it can't be an assumption that it is like from an insurance standpoint, you have to have a sign posted.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've purchased signs for like all of the entrances, all of the exits. And that one, again, every person out there, you can make a sign yourself and laminate it. It, you know, costs you 10 cents of a sheet of paper. So definitely something that everyone should be doing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think that was one thing I really liked at the barn that I rode at as a teenager is the barn manager was very, very cognizant of that. And she taught and trained all of us little barn rat kids, like how to have a conversation with an adult who was smoking that you didn't want to. Because it was the same thing. It was a lesson barn. You had all sorts of people coming in, family, friends. And so we were all very comfortable being like, hey, like that's actually not allowed here. You're going to need to leave the property to do that. And like holding our ground. And it was terrifying as a kid. Yeah. But I was really grateful that like she wanted to make sure that we all felt empowered to keep the barn safe too. Because she's one person and we were 10 barn kids.
100%. And honestly, that's going to be... So like when we do finally push out the policy right now, it's just with staff and, you know, like internal employees. When it does go out to the rest of the barn, that's a huge piece of it, right? Like see something, say something. And it's not just the smoking. If you are a boarder at my barn and you see something that's in disrepair, I want you to feel comfortable enough to call me up and say like, hey, I'm sorry to have to be the one to inform you of this, but like this heater isn't working or this fan isn't working. Something has shorted and it needs attention. To be honest, that's how we found out about the circuit breaker flipping. I'm not down there at every second of every day. So we had a boarder tell us like, hey, just so you know, anytime we plug in X, Y, and Z fan into this circuit, the breaker flips and everybody loses power. And we're like, oh, that's not right. So we rely on, I'm glad that your trainer, you know, implored the kids to, you know, help keep, because it takes everybody. And if you see something, you say something and it cannot be demonized. It has to be celebrated. So that will certainly be, you know, a piece of our policy as well, is just encouraging everyone who takes part in activities on the property to help us maintain a safe space.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like it's a community, like your horse is boarded next to all these other horses, like their neighbors, your neighbors. So it's nice to feel like everybody has this like common goal of keeping everybody safe and healthy and happy. It brings it all together a little bit, it feels like, versus the, you know, having a force that's wandering around prowling the barn looking for problems. It's everybody just keeping an eye out for each other.
Amen.
Love that. Okay. So the other thing too, I kind of want to talk about, and we talked about a little bit with like having, you know, spaces cleared out, keeping the barn safe, but a lot of that was kind of like prevention. And there's also the preparedness side. Yeah. So this is where I want to talk back because you mentioned a fire drill.
Yeah. We're
prepping. Talk to me about what that looks like.
Yeah. We're prepping for a fire drill. So I've written and rewritten the instructions like 5 times.
Sure.
Because like as you think about it, right, you're like, what do we do if we see a fire happening? And so like the 1.0, like the first instruction is like, take a deep breath and be calm.
Yep.
Because like you are now, you know, person zero. You yep. are now the person who has to call the troops together. So like, take a deep breath, scan your environment. Who is there? Maybe you can't find Damien. Maybe you can't find staff. So it's just you and borders, right? Take an inventory of who you have at your disposal and how you all can work together. So that's like the first piece of the fire drill. And then you want to believe, like, we take one horse out at a time, lead him into a paddock, ensure that his halter is off. Not realistic, right?
Sure, so
at first,
great.
I was also like, okay, you know, lead all the horses out. And then I was like, that's not realistic. Like, I guess it depends. Like, is this a tiny little fire that we could put a fire blanket on and or grab the fire extinguisher? Or is this like a 3-bell, we got to get out of here?
Yeah. And do you have 3 horses or do you have
100%? Yeah. Like, is this during the day when everybody's out?
Yeah. There's
is this
a lot
in
of
the
that.
Evening? Exactly. So there are like a lot of if-then questions that start the fire drill. But really what we ended up with is find a person to head to the front of the property and close the gate. So that's number one. That's one of the first parts of the fire drill is assess your environment, take a deep breath, take an inventory of who's with you, and send someone to the front of the property to close the gate. Because odds are we're just going to open stall doors and we want to make sure the horses can be contained within the property. The back gate is always closed. So it's just the gate that people drive in and out of. So that's the first thing. And then it's, you know, there's a couple different wings of the barn. And in a perfect scenario, we have an employee assigned to each wing. But again, you know, you can't foresee how things are going to unfold. But yeah, as it's written, you know, we have an employee assigned to each wing so that in the event of this emergency, everybody knows where they are supposed to report to. With 60 stalls to open and you have 4 employees, everyone's heading in one direction, it's not going to work.
Yeah. No.
But I mean, before any of that happens, you know, take an account of who's there and is it safe to even enter the building to, you know, people have
yep,
to be
where's
preserved.
It at?
So
how
you're not heading into
it?
A fire. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's
actually,
the beginning of it.
With that, because you're sending somebody to the front to close the gate, which makes 100% sense. And then is that person staying there to let in fire assistance as well? Like,
oh,
is that now
great,
their job?
Great question. Jenna, listen, I should have consulted you in the creation of my fire plan.
So I'm just anxious. That's my
a great
one
question.
And only claim to fame on this.
You should be a consultant now for preparedness plans. That's a great question. I probably should add that. Yeah, they could probably bulldoze through it. But great, great question.
That's true. They probably
it's
will
the only
just
egress.
Through
no, I hope that they don't through. Because then the horses are going to get out. So great question. I'm going to have to add that person stays and mans the gate.
Look at that. And if this isn't the perfect example of like, use your resources, talk
totally.
To people.
Yes.
Don't be afraid to rewrite yep. it a sixth time. Like it.
Oh, it's again, when I said in the beginning that these plans, they do get printed out, but they also live in a shared doc on like on a computer so that I can evolve them as things evolve. This is why, right? You think
yeah.
of new scenarios and again, you can't plan for everything, but you can plan for as
no.
much as you can plan for. So but here's the thing that's really important about the fire drill is that
yeah.
you can't quite tell borders like we're just going to close the gate and practice
oh,
releasing
yeah.
all your horses, right? So the way we do it is like when the horses are out, what we will
okay.
do during the morning time, we will do it'll just be turnout, right? Like where we're practicing using turnout as an excuse to bring all the horses outside anyways. The difference
mm-hmm.
is they will all go into their paddocks as they would, and we're
yeah.
not going to be rushing. But that will just be, hey, remember where you assemble. Remember where you go. You know, you're assigned to this wing. You're assigned to that wing. And then, you know, practice bringing the horses in and out and which doors you're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
If a door is blocked, what's your closest exit to that? So that would be what the actual drill looks like. Because
yeah, it's having the muscle memory in
yeah,
so many
exactly.
instances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now,
that's
in the event of a
smart.
Real emergency, the odds are that you are just going to open the doors and try to get, you know, everybody out and just close the gate. And you know, they're probably all going to be assembled outside in chaos. But, you know, we just want them out of the barn. So,
yeah,
the actual drill may not look exactly like it's going to look in the event of an emergency, which does make it a little bit more complicated. And I had a couple. So when I pushed the information out to the borders, a lot of borders were eager to participate.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
They were like, we want to know how we can help, which I love. And I said, we want that too. But for the first fire drill, we're going to keep it to staff only. And we're actually going to close the barn for an hour, like in the morning. Well, the barn doesn't even open yet. So we're going to try to do it before opening. And then the barn will be closed until 9 so that we can get all of the staff feeling really comfortable in what their jobs are. And then we will, you know, invite the rest of our boarders to come experience one as well so that we can all be really educated on what our jobs are and what we're supposed to be doing in the event.
That makes such good sense, though, because your boarders are going to look to the staff to know what to do, where to go, and honestly, how calm to be.
Totally.
So giving your staff the opportunity to practice it first and be able to be that resource. Again, it's muscle memory. So not that it will ever happen, but if something were to happen, everybody will have the muscle memory of looking to the staff. The staff will remember where to go and what to do. It'll just, I think that's a really smart way of doing it. That's really cool. And I kind of wish it was something that I had, you know, hadn't thought of or done in my previous horse life too. But it's definitely something I will be considering and suggesting going forward.
Well,
so,
thank you.
Cool.
Yeah, there were some people that did not like that. And I listen, I get it. Like your horse is in someone else's care. And that is a hard, like that's a tough, like letting go of that autonomy is really challenging.
Yeah.
I've boarded my horses before and that, like that's hard. So leaving that trust, but I, you know, I was hoping in good faith, like, hey, listen, it's underway. We're doing it. So as soon
and you're
as,
not just opening the doors and letting the horses.
No, we actually did get that question. Like, hey, when you do the fire drill, you're not actually going to do it the way you do it in a fire. And I was like, oh my goodness. No. That was that would be a recipe for disaster. So,
We would actually have to close the barn for a day to get all the horses.
To get them all. Lord help us. So I mean, making sure you run through it and you just understand like the anatomy of your barn and where your fire extinguishers are located or your fire blankets and where your emergency phone, like, so we're hardwired through, we have like smoke and heat detectors in the ceiling and we're hardwired through like our local fire department. So like knowing where all of that is in the barn, knowing your egress, where your exits are. We don't have any quote emergency exits. So just understanding like where every door is. Some of them are people doors. They can't fit horses out of them. So making sure that you're just, you know, really in tune with your environment, I think is, you know, a lot of what that fire plan and actually executing a fire drill would look like.
Yeah. And I feel like that goes through a lot of the preparedness, right? Like evacuation plans, where you're, like you said, where your fire extinguishers are, where your smoke detectors are, where your alarms are. And then the other pieces too that you've kind of touched on a little bit, but just kind of, you know, saying it specifically is making sure that things are accessible and available. Like if you're taking horses out, you want to make sure that their halters and their lead ropes are hung in places that you can grab them and find them if that's what you're doing. You want to know where things are. You want to know that the aisleways are clean so you can actually lead horses through and out doorways, knowing that people aren't going to park their cars in front of doors.
Yep.
Just the everyday stuff that I think a lot of us who have been in barns for a while subconsciously think of, but saying it out loud just for the benefit of checking it off the list too.
And then making sure that emergency services can actually gain entry to your property.
Yeah.
That's an important one too. I forgot.
Well, I mean, you're focused on the safety of the horses and getting them out. It is fire safety's job to also figure out how to get in. But hey, now you have that added to the list. And, you know, keeping aisleways clean is a big part of that, too. So again, so they can enter and do their job. And with the fire department and with all the notices and the paperwork you guys have, do you have like numbers posted places for people to call if there's an emergency?
Yep. So emergency, like our number, Damien's number, fire, who to call. And then we have like our local quadcom, like non-emergency. There's a horse that's like out in the forest preserve. We don't need to call 911, but we need an officer on it. Yeah. So we have, or we will have like posted placards of all of this along with egress signage. And then like one thing that I also want to add is like, don't be afraid to call your local fire department and ask for someone to come help you. Like, hey, I'm not really sure where to start. Could we get a fire marshal out here to hold my hand and help me walk through this, right? So I think that like relying on your local services, like that's what they're there for. And they certainly don't want your barn to burn down either.
No.
So they would love to come out and help you. So use your local resources. Use, you know, everything and anything that you have at your disposal. You don't know what you don't know. So having a professional fire serviceman or servicewoman out to help you identify the risks that you may just be looking over every day and not even noticing is also a really great tool to use.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of preparedness that I think I probably would have overlooked, honestly, had you not said it, because I think as horse people, like we stay within the industry so often because it's so niche. Only we know what we're doing and things like that. But we don't know everything about fire. So outsource. Like outsource. They might not know how to safely lead a horse out to a pasture, but they sure as heck can look around your barn and tell you if things look like it's going to catch and like you should be aware of it. That's such a good idea. They are emergency response teams, but like I think as a community, especially a horse community, there's a great way that we could partner with and utilize them more. And if you think about it, if they've been out to your property before and they know you, they know what you're trying to do, that's only going to help them do their job better in the case of as well.
Yep. I love that. I love that. And my anecdote was not important, so I wanted to let you finish your thought. But I was going to say, my town is so equestrian based that we actually have first responder training every year. And they, like in their squads, they drive around with a halter and lead rope and a bucket. Like in
no
in
kidding.
Because this is real. Like it happens all the time. Oakwood is just one of many large boarding barns in the area, and there are loose horses all the time. So we have like trainings. They may not be every year now, they're biannual because they've all been trained. But yeah, it's like a thing, like where we train the police and fire and medics on like what do you do when a horse comes trampling your way down a busy highway? Like, what do we do now? So
how cool is that? And for anybody listening to this and you're like, well, I don't have that, see if you can get it started.
Right,
maybe your barn's the one that creates that in your place.
Yeah, this was not like a public thing. Like the riding club in our area just kind of started it and called up the police station one day and was like, do you guys think it would be of value to learn how to handle horses in an emergency? And they showed up deep. So yeah.
I mean, everybody wants to pat a pony, but also learning how to handle things in emergency is great.
Amen.
That's super, super cool. Yeah. So we've gone through kind of prevention and emergency preparedness. And then there's like a quick thing to be said too on just like the everyday habits, right? Mm-hmm. So like you mentioned walking through at night check and checking things. I mentioned like keeping barn aisles free. Is there anything else that you guys kind of just everyday do to ensure, you know, with unplugging and things like that? Is there anything else that you would add to it?
Yeah, I mean, turn off your lights, unplug your equipment, make sure that you're taking inventory of anything that does stay plugged in, like our heaters stay plugged in overnight. So make sure that when you close those doors and you shut off the lights and you're gone for the night and there's not going to be someone sleeping in your barn, make sure that everything that you have left in there is serviceably sound, right? I think that keeping tabs on everything and keeping inventory is really the best thing that you can do. And if you've fed for the night and all of the hay that you had in your barn is in stalls, you know, whatever you had left in there, you know, do your best to take out. Like, honestly, I would almost rather my hay sit like under a tarp outside. do your best to get as much hay out of the barn as possible.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that you can do. There's a lot of things that we don't have control over. Yeah. And we've kind of gone through just a number of different things to keep in mind, which is it's no small amount. And I'm sure we didn't touch on everything. I'm sure there's somebody out there that's like, hey, you forgot this. And find us in the comments, let us know, because even if we can't touch on it in this episode, maybe somebody will read your comment and be like, oh, wait, that's really helpful. That's really cool. Yeah. So appreciate it.
And I will reiterate too that like if you're thinking about this, you're doing it right. If you if fire safety concerns you, then you're already on the right track and you're going to be cognizant of all the things that could, you know, lead to a disaster. So I think that just staying vigilant, making sure that you're doing everything you can to control the circumstances that you have control over. And that's really all you can do.
Yeah. And I know, so this, we're going to focus here and stay focused here on, you know, the fire safety and prevention. But you mentioned too at the beginning of this, and I want to give us a second for it, is that you have like a disaster preparedness guide. So like what else, you know, quickly, because we could spend days on this.
Yep. We can have a whole nother podcast on this, but some things some things that we have to consider. We live in the Midwest, so tornado plan. It looks different, right? With a tornado, people probably shouldn't be outside. And there's also camps of people that believe horses should go and run and people that believe horses should stay in. So, you know, that is a lot more subjective than fire safety. And everyone's going to have their own way to do things. Like, for example, if you live in Florida and your barn is block and was built to withstand a Cat 5 hurricane, you probably want your horses to stay inside, right? So I think that is certainly, you know, based on the facility itself and is subjective based on what your buildings are built for. But tornadoes, something to keep in mind, depending on where you are. Hurricanes, something to keep in mind. Flooding is something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Wildfires. So, I mean, in some places of soil erosion and landslides. Like there's so many different things. Now, we don't have those concerns where I am specifically, but, you know, we have them prepared for blizzards. We have them prepared for floods and tornadoes, hail, things like that. So just trying to lay the groundwork of like, it's not a one size fits all. There are going to be other disasters where your plans may look a little bit different and horses and people need to stay in, or, you know, it's not even safe for people to be outside. So yeah, lots of considerations. And again, these are not things to scare people. It's just something to keep in your brain and, you know, you just mull it over. Think about it sometimes. Put a pen to paper if you want to consider creating a plan for it and just make sure that everyone's on the same page. That's the best thing you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate you touching on all those things because I think fire is something that we all, I mean, if you step foot into a barn, that's something that you can be aware of. But across the country, across the world, you're going to have different concerns. But I guess for me, like I've always considered it the same as like if I'm jumping a horse, I'm going to put a helmet on because I would rather be safe than sorry as a personal thing. And I think the same should go for disaster preparedness. Like it'd be better to be safe than to be sorry in so many of these instances. So even if it's stressful, even if you're like me and the idea of, you know, really sitting down and considering it starts brewing an ulcer, I'd rather be on GastroGuard personally than not have a plan in the case of needing it.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, I slept better the night after we finished the document for sure. I mean, we still have a lot of work to do. We still have to, you know, push it out to everybody. We have to get all of our staff. You know, we have quarterly trainings that our staff have to do. So we have to get all of that in place. And we still have a long way to go, but it certainly, you know, checks the box knowing that at least the plan is in place. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love what you said. If you're thinking about it, you're already, you know, doing the right steps to, you know, keep going forward on it. So it's definitely a little bit of a heavier episode. I know that it's a scary and tough subject for a lot of us, but I appreciate you coming in and sharing so much of your expertise as a barn owner, as somebody who's, you know, unfortunately been through it and what you guys are taking steps for. I think in my mind, what you guys are doing is so much like gold standard. So if anybody out there is being like, well, I can't be like Ashley, don't worry. Most people can't be like Ashley. I sit here and think that all the time. But at least there's a lot of great takeaways to consider going forward. And we really appreciate you sticking with us through this because it's not easy to talk about, but it is important.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Jenna. I appreciate it.
Now, let's meet the pack.
All right, everybody. Thank you for sticking around. I'm excited for this edition of Meet the Pack because we have a new face. Well, I guess voice for you guys. A new voice for you guys to meet and chat with. We're going to talk to Amanda Bodkin, who actually, Amanda, why don't you tell us what it is you do here? Because I'm going to butcher your title.
No problem, Jenna. My name is Amanda Bodkin, and I am the PR and sponsorship manager at Smart Equine. What that means, lots of things. That means that I not only manage all of the Smart Pack contracts with our partners like AQHA and the United States Equestrian Federation, but I also help manage all of our sponsored athletes and all of the trade shows. So anytime you see us on boots in the ground, that's something that my team has put together. So we do a lot of different things.
And you have a massive team for it, right?
Yeah, just me and Sophie all. We're kicking butts, taking names.
Truly a small but mighty team.
Yes, very mighty. I'm so very thankful that from day one, Sophie and I clicked. Almost everything that we do, we align in, or if somebody has a different point of view, it's like, oh, that's a great idea. I didn't think about it that way. So I'm very thankful to have her on my team because I couldn't do it without her.
So what I'm hearing is I need to get her on soon too.
Yes, she's one in a million.
Oh, love that. Well, we're going to loop back on what it is you do because it is pretty cool and pretty unique to the company. But before we do that, let's hit some of the good stuff. So you have what, two horses at home?
Yep, I have two geldings, 19 and 24. They are quite the bonded pair. Well, I like to say one is bonded to the other. The other one does not really care. But two geldings, and they are the heart and soul of, I think, my mother's life. I know. She loves them dearly, and I try to get out to see them when I can. Just travel, and we board at a full care facility out about 30 minutes away, just because boarding is a little scarce here in Colorado, especially for an indoor arena. But, two boys, they are quirky as can be, too.
And remind me, because they're a little bit older, but they're actual, truly golden oldies, right? Like, are they both quarter horses?
So one is a quarter horse Arab cross, and then the other one is actually a full paint. I was finally able to go into his lineage and find his great, great, great grandsire painted Robin, and he's a spitting image of him. But they are both Palomino, and they both have some white markings. So I am.
So we're keeping it consistent.
Yes, I don't know what it is with Palominos. I'm like, yep, that one, please.
Hey, you know what you like. It's nice to have a type. Okay, so we have two golden boys who look similar, but I got a question. Do they have the same supplements? Do they do something different? What do you have in their smart packs?
For the most part, I keep them the same. They are both on Smart Digest Ultra.
That's a great one.
It's one of my favorites, especially because of the probiotics that help the gut. Whether you're traveling, whether it's weather changes, you've got antibiotics going on. I know that their gut system is always going to be supported with those probiotics. And of course, Colicare, because especially now that Shapalo is 24, he's not covered by insurance anymore for full coverage. And having SmartPak go up to 15,000 in coverage, I feel is really beneficial and something that everybody should be on, because it's like the difference between 10 and 15 is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's not insignificant.
It is. And I feel like everybody should be on some sort of Smart Digest Ultra or some sort of gut support.
Always a go-to for me too.
Yeah. So I have them both on that. And then Colt gets a little extra support for his arthritic joints. But otherwise, that's all they're on right now.
Nice to be able to keep it simple, right?
Yeah, like they're half retired. They don't need a lot of extra fluff.
Sure.
You know, they have earned their retirement.
Yeah, so, and it's just whatever keeps them going happy and healthy out in the field.
Yeah, like sometimes simpler is better.
Totally agreed. Okay, I could talk about you and the boys all day, but I do actually want to talk a little bit more about what you do here. Because again, you're the only one who does it with Sophie, and it's pretty cool. So for the PR side of things, you mentioned some pretty big organizations that we work with. Mm-hmm. What is it that we do with like the Hunter Jumper Associations and the Reining Associations? Is it banners? Is it discounts? What can you tell us about that?
It's a little bit of everything depending on the organization, like the American Quarter Horse Association. Not only do we support the professional horsemen, the horseback riding group, there's a lot of different programs within the breed association that we support through events, through member discounts, through giving awards, anything like that. On the English side of things, lots of award support, because we know that the cash incentive is not always there for them. And sure. So we try to support with awards and also just educating the members on a lot of the health knowledge that we have, because we are such a melting pot with the Horse Health Library. I try to really make sure that their members feel supported in any issues that may come up with their horses. So we're always sending out emails, social posts, anything like that, especially with new supplements, letting them know, hey, we've got this innovative supplement. If you've got ocular issues, anything like that, from USHJA to USDF to USEF to USCA, the reining horses, we're trying to do it all. So we get to meet a lot of really neat people, not only from your pros, but also just your average, you know, competitor that's like made it to regionals. And we want them to know that we're here to support them. It's important to support everybody, no matter their level of competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as amateur adults also, I'm always excited when we get to support other Ammies. Pros, you're doing great. I love everything you're doing out there. But for those of you who are like, am I on the right lead? Is this going okay? Did I remember to breathe today? Like, I see you. Yes. I see you and I want to support you.
Yeah, exactly. Because we all can't be Boyd, but no. We all can't be Anna Buffini and Boyd Martin. And, you know, we love them dearly, but most of us are just average. And that's okay.
And actually, speaking of the sponsored riders, great segue, because that's another big part of what you do. And something I wanted to ask you about specifically is, like, we recently brought on Anna Buffini, which was so freaking cool. And I got to imagine that took a ton of time. So without getting too into, like, the proprietary stuff we probably can't talk about, like, what was that timeline from start to finish? How long did it take to get Anna, who is wonderful and was excited to work with us, on board?
Well, we probably watched her for at least a year and a half, just kind of like keeping tabs on her, just like, oh man, she's really cool. We love our social. We love how she talks about her horses, how she rides, just her overall presentation of who she is as a human. And then as an equestrian, and then, you know, competing. So we watched her for quite a while. And then my brain is like, okay, it was last year that we brought her on. So yeah, it was January. And the same management company that manages Boyd and Silva also managed Anna. So right. I was like, hey, Taylor, you know, like.
Yeah, shout out Encanto. You guys are amazing.
Yes, we couldn't do it without them. And I was kind of like, hey, you know, we've been watching Anna for a while, at least a year, year and a half. And I was like, we're really interested in her. Her platform's excellent. She's excellent. And we know she's got a big year coming up because last year was the Olympics.
Yeah.
And she was going to be a big contender for making it. And so oddly enough, Anna has been a Smart Pack fan since she was young. And so when they went to her, it was almost like an instant yes. She was like, yes.
Honestly, so cool.
I know, it was really, it only took us a couple months to get everything together.
Oh, wow.
Because luckily she didn't have any other supplement sponsorships. And
right, so we didn't have any conflicts to work around yet. That's super convenient. So we really got in while getting was good.
Yeah. And I think it took a little bit just because of the contract process for everything to get finalized. But like the, yes, this is what we're doing. This is the supplements. This is, you know, everything in the contract, because I wanted to make sure it was signed, sealed, and delivered before she left for Paris.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not that she could do any promotions or anything, but sure. I wanted her to have that support behind us. And of course, supplements overseas, it's not something we can do. But that way, when she got back, we could hit the ground running. We could launch the partnership. So oddly enough, it was really easy, which was very exciting. And we were all so excited. And I'm a Western rider. So for me, I was like, oh my God, we get to find Anna Buffini. This is amazing. Like, we get to be at the beginning of her career, you know, like she's already made a great start to it. And like Boyd, we brought Boyd on over 15 years ago.
Which is so crazy to think about.
I know. And being there to support a rider at the beginning and see them all the way through the ups and downs of their 20-year career is something so important to, I think, Sophie and I. Like, we love our pros, but like, we got to support everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, being able to start out with Anna so early on and knowing that she was a fan and a user prior to us even reaching out to her is like, what a cool experience. And like, we've gotten to meet her, and not to turn this into like an Anna Buffini fan segment, but like, Anna, you're so cool. We just love you. We're so glad to have you. Yeah.
She's incredible. It's cool. Well, and at the brand shoot, she was like, I just want to tell you guys, thank you so much. And I was like,
no, Anna, thank you. Oh, gosh, we're getting sappy over her now. Anna, don't listen to this. We're embarrassing ourselves. Well, we could talk about everything you do and Anna and Boyd for forever. And honestly, maybe we should have you on for a whole different segment where we do get to talk about this in depth. But for now, I'll have to cut us off because we do go too long. I'm going to get some feedback. So, Amanda, thank you so much. This was so cool to get to talk to you and hear a little bit more about what you do and everything that you do for Smart Equine and all the cool stuff that you're putting out there with all of our programs and all of our partnerships. So big thanks to you, and hopefully we get to have you on again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jenna. This is really exciting, especially for as Smart Equine gets to be more boots on the ground and more trade shows and more horse shows. Like, definitely, like, come see us. Come find us. We want to talk to you. We want to get to know our horse owners.
Hey, all, thanks so much for listening. As a reminder, we're hosting giveaways at the end of every episode, so be sure to stick around and keep staying tuned to the very end with me. Last week for episode 2, we gave away a Smart Equine branded backpack and a Smart Equine gift card, and I am super stoked to announce that our very first winner of our very first giveaway was Talia from California. So Talia, if you're listening, congrats again and thanks for entering. If you haven't gotten an email from me yet, keep an eye on your inbox today. For episode 3, which is this one, we're giving away a travel blanket and a Smart Equine gift card. So be sure to enter by using the link in the podcast description to go right to our giveaway form, or go to www.smartpackequine.com/blog/podcast-giveaway. I know it's long. I'll give it to you one more time. It is www.smartpackequine.com/blog/podcast-giveaway. So entries close 1 week after each episode's airs, which means you have until September 22nd for this one. So get your entries in, share your feedback, and be sure to tell your horse I said hi.
As a reminder, you can find links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
We are here twice a month on the 15th and 30th, but in between, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Smart Equine, or you can shop online at smartequine.com. Until next time, stay smart, stay safe.
And give your horse a cookie from us.